With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome, old listeners and new. You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, season 2, episode 1, hosted by me, Corin, aka The Last Skeptic. Now, apologies to the regular listeners for the very, very long break. I've been storing away the good shit, and trust me, it is worth the wait. These episodes were lovingly recorded over the last 8 months or so, so some references, release dates, and all that might be a little bit out. But you know what? Who gives a shit? As always, it gets super fucking sweary, so if you're easily offended, listen to some other shit. And do not forget, if you love the Thanks for Trying podcast, write me a nice review on iTunes, whatever it is that you download podcasts on. It justifies my entire existence. This inaugural episode of the Thanks for Trying podcast season 2 features my two pals, Ramesh Ranganathan and Ed Skrine. You're in for a treat. This episode was recorded in March 2018, live in front of an audience at the Phoenix in London. Enjoy this. There is 9 more episodes to go of this season, one released a week. You lucky fucking bastards.
It gives me great pleasure on Thanks for Trying episode, which is now going to be episode 1 of season 2. Shit. My good friends, Ramesh Ranganathan and Ed Skrine, make some fucking noise! Did you like how rap that was?
I like the fact that you celebrated a self-appointed new season.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not really... Nobody's declared that. You've not been recommissioned. It's a fucking podcast.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That's true.
But good for you, man. Good for you.
If I don't, then who will?
If I don't
celebrate
congrats on season 2, bro.
Thanks, man. Listen, I made
fucking
it.
Hell.
I made it to season 2. Made
Holy
it.
Holy shit.
I made it, man.
How did that come about, man?
Like,
how did it do?
I just think things get better and better.
Yeah,
like,
you just thought, I'm going to do season 2. And then
when people try to hold you down, Ramesh, you just have to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
It's such an inspiration to so many people to see you struggle on.
Yeah.
And
especially me.
I just want to say thank you, man.
No worries.
I do it for you.
It
means a lot to people around my area.
How are you guys doing, Ed? How are you?
I'm good, bruv. I'm
good. Shall we go in on something that I guess people want to talk about, is the Hellboy situation? What's next for Ed Skrine?
She's giving it to Russell Brand, 5 questions in 1, isn't it? Which one should I go for?
That's how he's rolling on season 2, mate.
You know what I mean?
Season 1 was
he used to smash out one question at a time, and now he gives his 5 of the cunts.
Yeah, on the Hellboy thing, there's nothing to say about it other than just like, there was only one thing to do and just did the right thing. That was it. Podcast gold, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Do you know what I mean? Come out with the proper
one-liners. When you say it was the right thing to do, which it was, I guess... I mean, I don't know the machinations behind the scenes of you coming to that decision. Even though you thought it felt it was the right thing to do, was it still difficult to do that? I mean, that's a tough thing to do. Yeah. I mean, you're walking away from a job, right? That is difficult.
Walking away from a job, but, you know, the perspective means that there's a lot of different factors in it. In some ways, you know, it's fucking hard to get out of bed in the morning sometimes. You know what I mean? It's like... You know, everything is difficult in its own way, but in another way, no, it wasn't difficult at all. You know, it was scary. I was scared that the production company were really great to me, actually, before that. And after that, that they would feel like I threw them under the bus. I was scared that the director and the actors in the cast would feel like I'm throwing them under the bus and, like, kind of jumped out and been like, yeah, it was them lot, do you know what I mean? But, you know, we spoke and we had some, heartfelt email exchanges.
Yeah.
If that can be
really heartfelt.
That's such a thing, isn't it?
Super I've heartfelt. Had that. That's how like, I, that that's deep, how I met my wife.
Italic.
Some really strong Hotmail action.
MSN.
Oh mate.
MSN man.
Cracking one off to MSN. Sweet.
Those were the good days.
Obviously it was, you know, I was turning down imaginary money because right. I'd agreed the deal, but no money had gone into my account. So, you know, my life hadn't changed. If I looked at it with perspective, I'd say like a month before that, I'd never even considered being in it. And
did it bug you out to have people like Jessica Chastain and Mark Ruffalo and all these people, like obviously showing their support, rightfully so? Like, was that like a surreal moment?
For me, the impact of Twitter is such that it's not really real.
Yeah.
So I see these characters and I can see these things and people with blue ticks and stuff, but they don't make that much difference from Joe Bloggs, and all of them kind of bundle into this experience that's not really real to me. Mm. But, you know, I'd say the best thing about the whole experience was the positive reaction.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Like, it was like, rah.
The amount of support.
Yeah, the amount of support. No, what it meant to other people. Not right. the support for me, because fucking nothing, you know what I mean? I'm giving up a job that I didn't even start.
Yeah.
But that it meant so much to other people. I'd read things and I'd be like, fucking hell, that's unbelievable. Mm. So that was beautiful. But, you know, the end result of it was not for me. It wasn't. As soon as I sent that tweet, it was like, right, that's the world. Now the world can get on with it. And, the right way has been paved. But, yeah, I just kind of mosey carried on.
And so the next thing for you the is In Darkness. That's the next film.
Yeah, I've got, you've got like six movies dropping this year.
Holy fucking
film.
Shit. No wonder you walked away, mate. Who gives a shit? Oh, it's difficult, you know.
Yeah, it's tough out here.
I only had six movies lined up afterwards. Fuck. I mean, so it's a big sacrifice. I reckon you're just clearing up your fucking schedule, mate.
In Darkness is going to be sick. I know that's one that you personally, you're excited about. You want to see.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
I'm excited to see that.
Do you know what? It's a weird thing again, kind of like that Hellboy decision that all of the projects that I do, I really care about. And you know, I'm really invested in them and I give everything to them while I'm doing them. Mm. But once they're done, they're properly done. They're actually not mine no more. It's a relay race. I pass the baton. And of course, I'm invested in how the runner in front of me runs.
Yeah.
But I'm done, bruv. You know what I'm saying? All my adrenaline is done. I don't have to think about my technique or do anything anymore. And so once I've finished it and it's wrapped, it's for you lot to decide how fucking shit it was or great it was. And even then, it doesn't make that much difference to me. I'm already thinking about the next project.
Because you're one of the most zen individuals that I know. Is that difficult to keep that zen in this industry, which is full of like
gas.
Such dickheads?
I mean, I've worked in a lot of industries and I've always worked with a lot of dickheads.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, I'm surrounded by dickheads.
Yeah.
So,
I can't think what you
Same
mean.
Same shit, different toilet.
Yeah, no idea.
What's your fucking problem, bro?
You just made me snot on the mic. That was...
It's all your fault.
Romesh, so you just came back from LA?
I did, yeah. Well, I got back before Christmas. Yeah.
That's fine. So you just got back from LA?
Yes.
Were you filming out there? You're doing something new?
Yes. So I was doing I was doing a documentary series. I guess the hook of the show, if you like, is the fact that I went to America and I've got no profile in America. And then I hired out the Greek theatre. And so that series follows me trying to sell it out.
What seater is the Greek theatre?
5,900.
Jesus.
Is this your press spiel? Like that was that little soundbite there, the little sentence that you give to everyone when they ask about the sitcom?
Yeah, I mean that is the hook of the show. But like, most of the show is just us fucking about. And right. Like, you know, the truth is like that is the thing that drives. I mean, that is what we were doing. That was the reason I was there, was to try and sell out the Greek.
Great.
But most of the show isn't me doing promo for the Greek. I mean, what a fucking inane show that would be. Do you know what I mean? But like, it's just sort of me and my family trying to. Because, you know, I went there, my wife and kids came with me. They're in the show as well. Because they have to be, because they're just following us about. My mum was living with us.
They're just following you about.
Yeah.
That's and, who are these people?
My uncle was living in the garage. So there's all this, there's all this side stuff that was going on. So basically, it's just like a series where they followed how we got on. Do you know what I mean? That's basically it.
What's it like working with your family in such close proximity?
It's great in many ways. Like, you know, I guess the biggest person that's emerged from like my family has been my mum. And someone from immigration. The thing about that was it's amazing to, because my mum can't sort of believe it. When we did Asian Provocateur, we had obviously had no idea what if that show was going to succeed or whatever. But we just thought, oh, it'd be funny for mum. Because, well, it was pretty organic, really. My mum was trying to get me to get in touch with my culture, so she planned what I did in Sri Lanka. So that's why she should be in the show. And my brother and I had always thought that she was funny, but we didn't know if other people would find her funny. You always find your mum funny and her cooking amazing, but you don't know if everyone else is going to feel like that. So we just put her in the show, and we thought, if she's natural, then it'll be great. If she starts thinking about the camera, then it'll be shit.
Yeah.
So for the first couple of, I'll be honest, the first hour or so filming with her, the director would be like, okay, so Shanti, you've got a, we're setting up you, Ramesh, doing the ceremony here, the blessing. So can you just talk to him about that? And then she'd go, darling, I would like to discuss with you the issues pertaining to the blessing ceremony vis-a-vis the Sri Lanka trip that you are undertaking very shortly. And the director's like, no, you've got to talk like how you normally fucking talk. Do you know what I mean? and then you go, right, go again. She'd go, you cockroach bastard, do the ceremony. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, as long as she was being herself, it was great. And then, what for me, it's amazing to see my mum become sort of known. Do you know what I mean? Like, because she sort of didn't know. She just filmed it because she would do anything for her kids. Yeah. She didn't know. I don't even think she knew it was a BBC show. I think she just sort of thought we were just filming this thing. And then suddenly people start recognising her. She's a celebrity at work now. Do you know what I mean? And all that stuff.
That's so sick.
And for me, it's amazing to watch her, because she's not shy, she fucking loves it. Do you know what I mean? Like, she pays for everything with cards, so they see the surname. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, she loves it. And for me, obviously, I would never begrudge her that. Like, I think it's amazing for her to be like, I think she's got a little bit out of control, if you want me to be honest. I think she's got a little bit big-headed.
So what's next? Is she going to take over the season on her own, the next one?
Well, she does get separate offers. And I sort of shut them down without passing them on. The truth is, sometimes I'll get asked for my mum to come on something with me or to do something together. And there are two things that I always think about. Is one, I don't want to kill that, you know, because I don't want people to go, fucking hell, like it's him and his mum arguing again or whatever. I don't want people to get sick of that. And also, I was always very nervous of my mum becoming this sort of wobble-headed caricature. Do you know what I mean? Like, in terms of like how you see Asian characters on Asian people on TV. Yeah. I didn't want it to be just because she's got an accent and she's sort of like, you know, because she's Sri Lanka, that's the comedy fit. I didn't want it to be like that. So I always think about, is this going to work? Is this going to be right? And then you make a decision. I mean, she doesn't give a shit. She'll do everything. Do you know what I mean? Like, she'll be like, why you don't think I'll be good? And then I have to explain it to her. But I want her to be. I'd love it if she went off and did shit without me.
Yeah.
I'd love it as long as I still had a career. If my career failed and then she carried on doing stuff, I'll be honest, I'll be fucking pissed. You want to be honest? I'd be happy for her, but there's a small part of me thinking, I hope she crashes and burns.
How much of this, like you mentioned, the caricature that people, whether it be the public or the executives, that they want to fulfill, how much have you encountered that as an issue from... Because I read your Guardian article about the LA experience.
Yes. Well, I sort of... when I started doing stand-up, I sort of... You know, when you start doing comedy, you don't know how far it's going to go. And I'll be honest with you, I never really thought I was going to end up doing TV. My ambition was like, I just want to be making a living from it.
Well, you were a teacher before.
I was a teacher, yeah. So I just sort of thought, if I'm...
Wait, in a school?
Yeah, what?
Primary school?
No, I was doing kung fu on top of a mountain. Yeah,
that would have been cooler.
I was a school teacher. Yeah, I was secondary school teacher. So when I first started doing comedy, I didn't think I was going to do TV. I just wanted to make enough money from the circuit to give up teaching, is the honest truth of it. And then, so you don't think about ramifications or box ticking or anything like that. But when I started getting a little bit of TV, I always thought to myself, I don't want people to go, he's the best Asian comedian around.
Yeah.
I want people to go, he's the best comedian around. Yeah. And I just sort of wanted for my ethnicity to not be a thing. They just go, Ramachandranathan is a good comedian. I don't want to go, he's a good Asian comedian. So that was always what was driving my decisions. And I've got to be honest with you, it sometimes made me, when I was starting out, move too far away from that. Not too far away, but I would instantly have a negative reaction. So, for example, early on, I was offered this thing where they were trying to get more ethnic minorities onto TV, into comedy, and it was like a big drive. And so they pitched to me this idea of me and like a few other Asian comics and a few black comics, and we do like a show together, and it's like a showcase or whatever. And immediately I said no, because I wanted to be on TV because I got on TV. I didn't want it to be part of some sort of drive or some sort of we're trying to get more diverse. I just wanted it to be Rom's good, let's book him for this show. And I can't guarantee you that every single time I've been on television is because they thought I was the best. I don't know what the thought process was. It's possible that I got booked for stuff or I got put on stuff because they went, we need a dark face.
So it's a quota.
Yeah, but I'm not going to turn down the money. Do you know what I mean? But at the same time, when I do that, I always think to myself, I've got to fucking do the best I can. And like,
because you did an article on this yesterday, a couple of days ago.
Yes, I did about the Wrinkle in Time. Yeah.
And you said you had a lot of shit. You got a lot of shit for it.
I've been getting a lot of shit. I mean, I deliberately write articles to piss people off. Like, I guess it's sort of, I think it's more enjoyable. But then what happens is whenever the article comes out, I have to spend the day being called a cunt on Twitter. Do you know what I mean? So, but it's sort of an occupational hazard, I guess.
Do you reply to everyone?
Sometimes I do. I sometimes do. If somebody, either if somebody's made a point that I think is interesting, then I'll engage with them. If somebody really has got the wrong end of the stick, then I'll engage with them. But the truth is most of the time I don't, because it's very rare that somebody expresses an opinion on Twitter, you express a counter-argument, and they go, do you know what? Yeah. I think you're right. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So I can't think of a time when that has happened.
I also hate it when people back down, because then I feel like a cunt. I kind of want more of an argument. You know?
That's never happened to me. I've responded and then the argument escalates. sometimes I've gone super, super passive just for a laugh. Like they've gone, oh, I think you're shit and I hope everyone involved in the show that you made dies. And I'll respond just going, yeah, we were disappointed with it too. Do you know what I mean? Like just, and then often that person will go, sorry, no, it was all right. Like there was some.
Do you think people are surprised that you've actually replied to them?
I think so. I think generally people, that when they tweet you, that I don't think they genuinely expect a response. Yeah. I said something about on Mock the Week once that I think that old people should just be allowed to be racist because it's just too difficult for them to change their ways now, and you should just, it's like a bus pass, they should just have a card, right? So that's what I said. And then I got, after it went out, the next day, I was just sort of logging into, I just checked
Freedom pass, in the true sense of the word.
Yeah. So the next day, I was just logging, and somebody said, my grandparents didn't die in the war for packies like you to express views like this.
What?
I'm going to find your address and kill you, right? So I sort of read it.
You were literally okaying it for them.
Yeah, I was like, dude. And the thing is, I thought, I can't even get annoyed at the comment because I don't know how old he is. Do you know what I mean? Like, because if he's over 60, then fine, drop the P-bomb, mate. What? I'm fucking down with it. I'm fighting for your rights, mate. What's up with you?
And also, I thought they were fighting in the war against racism.
I know, it's crazy. It was such a fucked up thing. So anyway, I read it.
I'm so confused.
I know, I read it. I didn't think it was a genuine threat. But I did think to myself, I don't really think it's okay for this guy to send shit like this and not have any repercussions. So I reported it to the police. I just said, look, I don't think this is, I'm not worried for my life.
Yeah.
I said, but this guy's a bellend. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And the police were really good about it. So they found this guy and they said to me, we found him and he really was shocked that he'd been located. But the problem is, in order to leave a message on my website, you've got to put your email address in. So I don't know what this fucking idiot was working. Like, I don't know what he was thinking. You're going to set up a terrorist cell, mate. Be anonymous. That's the first fucking... That's the first rule. I know I've set one up myself. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, actually, the police were more open with me than I anticipated because they said to me, look, I'm gonna, like they said, the guy said to me, look, mate, I'll be straight up with you. He shit himself. Like, he really did. He really did shit himself. Yeah. And we think that he's got the message. Now, if you want, we can press charges. But we think it'd be quite cool if he just wrote you a letter of apology.
That's amazing.
Right? So I said, yeah. I like a letter. Oh God, I haven't had a letter in ages.
An actual letter?
An actual letter, yeah. So I got letter. I got a letter from the guy. It was double-sided. He spaced the words out. He had beautiful handwriting. And he sort of went on to tell me how that... first, he was very apologetic. And he said that he'd been watching World War II documentaries and drinking wine. And he got battered. And then the documentary finished and he changed the channel and immediately it was me going on about how old, like just doing this thing.
Right.
And he said, I just got angry. And
so did he actually have grandparents that fought in the war?
No, I don't think so.
Wow.
And so he said, I'm really, really sorry. I just drunk.
What can you say to that? If someone said, like this is what I was saying earlier about Twitter. What can you say if someone actually apologises? You just have to forgive them.
Well, I actually thought it was quite... I was glad I did it because I sort of thought it took what was initially a sort of, quite a scary situation and then boiled it down to this fucking loser in a basement. Do you know what I mean? Just that I got pissed and I'm going to fucking message that packy. Do you know what I mean? Just like, it's sort of like... I'm not saying he's a loser, but... For that moment, he was. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I just think it's sort of suddenly, and that's the thing with Twitter, people say these things and you go, fuck. But actually, it's just some person just venting. Do you know what I mean? Like,
because they think it's anonymous.
Yes.
And they think that no one will ever see it. They think that you won't see it.
Exactly.
You have X amount of people.
And there are not enough steps between you thinking it and it being delivered. That's the problem with that.
Right.
So it needs to go, like, you, if you do a tweet like that or a message like that, your laptop should go, mate, this is a bit fucking strong. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If I received this, I'd report it to the police. So I'm just saying, I'll send it if you want.
Yeah.
But just, what do you reckon? Do you know what I mean? And then sometimes I think you just take that for you to go, do you know what? I'm just going to have a wank and go to sleep. I should not.
That's a great name for an album. Ed, do you get a lot of this on Twitter? Because I know you don't. You've backed away from.
I don't engage too much with that stuff. But I also, I don't get too much.
What's the craziest thing you've heard about yourself online?
No, I've got some boring answers, bro. No, man. But also, I don't watch it. I don't read. I don't care about that shit. I might look at it for a laugh, but...
Like how negative do you think social media is just in general for our sanity? Because I know that I can't... I periodically delete all of the apps from my phone because I just can't handle it.
My bro, I'm an optimist, man. Like, I feel like we're in a wonderful place of working it out. Like, we're really working out how all of this, how we've been going on and how we're going on. And everything is transitional. The variables always changing. So we're getting used to this fucking social media thing. It's fucked up in so many ways. So many people are stepping back from it, which is great because some of us learn after, you know, we all started drinking when we were 17. Some people learn, you know what, this booze ain't for me. I act like a fucking animal and I do things, you know what I mean? I'm working out that I'm not really a part of it.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I like the real world.
Do you find yourself wrong that you're checking it all of the time? Like,
I probably do check it. I check it probably more than I should, I guess. For comedy and Twitter are not great bedfellows in terms of we are in a situation, thanks to social media, where people don't appreciate nuance as much as they in comedy as much as they used to. And people feels like people are more ready to be offended by things. I don't sort of care as much as I used to about the responses I get.
Of course.
But I feel like so many comedians, yourself included, actually just kind of tell it how it fucking is, but how the rest of us, either who are in a professional realm and can't come out with certain things, or people that feel like they haven't got a voice because they're not in a professional... some imaginary status place, you know, that you guys can just tell it how the fuck it is. And I hear you, I hear Ricky, I hear certain people, and I'm like, fucking exactly, thank you. I'm so glad someone's saying it out loud and on stage or on a podcast or on radio. And you know, because life is fucking morbid and life is fucked. And keep preaching the truth, brother.
Thank you, man. I will do. That's one pathetic
one clap. Nice one.
One of the...
It was just one of the rest of the, you can leave.
One of the worst noises I've ever heard that was. Just somebody was just half a...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think
I'm sorry.
I sort of agree with what he said.
I can get them kicked out if you want. I'll take them out.
I do think like, but what you, but the thing is though, the truth is that I could say something off key on this podcast and I've got the luxury of being a comedian.
Yeah.
And so the fallout from that will be much less than if you say something. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I do sort of recognize that I'm in a luxurious position where people expect you as a comic to a degree. I mean, I could say something, I could say a career ender if you want me to, but
go
but
for
I,
it,
I think
go
like, I think
tonight's a good night.
Give me some more Peroni, I'll bring it to an end.
He's had one beer.
For comedians, it's just it's easier because people expect.
True,
people don't
if it's
expect
funny, it. Because I've, there's some comedians that are just want to do the whole. You know, like, I'm going to be super controversial, but there's no joke in there.
Well, there's this thing now, obviously, that's this guy, Count Dankula, who got convicted for this this pug thing.
Right.
Do you guys know
about
this?
I don't know about this.
On, so this guy in Scotland, he did this YouTube video where he said, my girlfriend thinks this pug is really cute, so I'm going to make it as appalling as I possibly can. Mm. So he got it to respond to the vocal cue, Gas the Jews. And then he got it to do a Nazi salute every time he says Zeke Carl, right? So that was a joke.
It's
a pug, yeah, exactly. It's amazing. I mean, I'm not saying it's amazing as a comedic thing. I'm saying to train a pug to do that is you've got to respect the technical.
Yeah. No, I feel you.
Do you know what I mean? I don't necessarily think it's funny, but it must have taken a while.
That's all
I'm saying. I think you've got to recognise that.
Yeah.
He's gone through a lot of doggy treats to get a pug to do that. Do you know what I mean?
What was the actual sentence he's got?
I can't remember. But he was done by the Scottish police for like hate speech or something.
Right.
So some comedians, I mean, I personally, I don't think it's right that he's been convicted. The thing is...
So is he a comedian or just Joe
Blogg? I guess he's a comedian, but I think he's not famous. He's like an open mic comedian or like circuit comedian or something. Mm. You know, the truth is it doesn't matter if he's a comedian or not. He was making a joke. Mm. And I sort of tweeted in his defence.
Yeah.
But the problem is that, and as if that makes a difference. Oh, Rom's tweeted in his defence. Oh, that case,
that's it. All charges
I'm on,
gone.
I'm on Dankula's side. But the controversy about it is this. First of all, it's arguably quite an offensive thing to do.
But also, I didn't think it was very funny.
Well, that's another thing. It's not very funny. Thirdly, it's the people that have come out in support of him, which is like Tommy Robinson's support.
Didn't I see a photo of him and Tommy Robinson?
Yeah.
And I was like,
so,
nah,
what
bro,
I would say is,
fuck that.
But I still, listen, I don't think it was funny. Mm. I wouldn't do it. I don't like Tommy Robinson. I don't like the people that have come out in support of him. So I disagree with almost all of it, except for the decision to remove his right to be able to do it. I don't agree with what he did. So I think it's
free speech.
I don't like it. I don't think it's funny, but I would defend his right to do it.
Yeah.
I just think his intent was not hate speech. His intent was a joke. It's a shit joke, but it's a joke.
It's a shit joke.
But I still think you should be allowed to make sure. You can't let someone off because they're not good at something. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, there are other people that have made Nazi jokes or jokes about Jews, but because they're better at the craft, you're going to let that pass. And because this guy's just a bit shit at it, you're going to say you're not allowed to do that. I just don't think... listen, I don't think it's funny. I think the guy... From what I've seen of the guy online, I'm not a fan of his. Yeah. I don't necessarily think he's a good bloke.
Mm.
I still defend his right to do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that once we start stopping that sort of thing, I just think it's a dangerous road that we're going down. That's the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even one clap.
Yeah, that's it.
No. Don't.
Don't even clap there.
Even a little prick at the back.
He had a go at me last time, so I'm not going to do it again.
So I, in last year, guested on your...
You did, and you were a brilliant guest.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You're
appreciate
excellent.
That. So who here listens to a podcast? My man has like one of the most listened to podcasts in the world.
I don't think that's true.
In the whole world, man. In the whole fucking world.
I'm a huge fan of it, man.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I actually, so before the podcast started, I'm a big fan of yours. And then when he came in and said he listened to the podcast, I sort of got a semi. I've got to be honest. I tried to play it cool. I said, oh, yes, sweet. But I thought, holy fucking shit.
Ed's a big podcast guy.
Yeah.
Like we,
okay, we don't take the gloss off it now.
Yeah. I listen to them all.
He says yours is the best.
Nah, I do love it. I like it. And do you know some of my favourite episodes on it are when people don't even really like hip hop? That's the funny thing about it.
Tom Davis came on. I saw Tom recently, and he really had a go at me for referring to him all the time as the one that knew the least about hip hop. But he was
amazing.
Hey, it's funny.
All he knew was like three Snoop tunes. Do you know what I mean?
Come on.
It was funny though. It's still a good episode. Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. I had a list when I did the podcast with you. I had a list of things that I wanted to talk about.
Yes, and we didn't talk about.
And we didn't talk about.
Yeah,
not even one.
Yeah, I tell you why, because the structure and the questions are to give the podcast something, if you know, it like a fallback. But the truth is, you and I had a nice chat, so it ended up with me not really going to the questions. So you should take that as a compliment.
No, it was good. It was just because I had things to try and redeem myself for my hip hop credentials.
Right.
Redeem?
Well, not redeem. Okay, we're established.
Right.
To people that weren't familiar.
To reinforce.
To reinforce. Yeah. And I had a list of things that I wanted to tell you.
Okay, go on.
To try and, you know.
Are you going to tell me them now?
I can do. He's got them written down, isn't he?
I can't. Yeah. I don't have them written down.
Yeah.
Go on.
I DJed for Guru once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Who's this clap prick? This guy.
Who's in the back?
This guy.
Clap me louder.
Who the fuck
fucking
up, man? Who the
guy.
Fuck are you?
Louder.
This guy.
That's
I did an impassioned speech about freedom of speech for the masses, and it got fuck all.
Gangsta, man.
Once
shit.
For Guru. Oh, yeah. Yeah. What a penis.
I closed my eyes and pretended I was DJ Premier.
So
I'm not going to lie.
How did this come about?
He was doing an in-store at a Carhartt store. This was a long time ago. He was performing and he didn't have a DJ, and I was opening up for him. So I ended up playing Mass Appeal for him rapping.
Were you nervous doing that?
Fuck yeah.
And what was he like to chat to? Did you tell him that Jazzmatazz was shit?
Not number one. Who are the heads in this building? Who are the hip hop heads here? Make some noise. Okay, so that's 35%.
Do you know what makes me obvious? I went to see Kendrick recently, right?
Yeah. You might have to tell them who that is, because there's fucking hip hop heads in the building.
I went to see Kendrick Lamar recently.
Okay, cool.
And as like many hip hop artists do, partway through the gig, he went, "Where are all my real Kendrick fans at?" Mm. And like everyone goes, And I said to my mate, it's so funny to ask that question, because is anybody going to go, "Well, actually, I'm not a massive fan. I just thought...
I liked his song with you too."
Yeah, exactly. I just thought I'd come along because it's a free ticket. A mate bought it. The other person dropped out, so I just came along, Kendrick. I'll be honest with you. Everyone's going, yeah. I've been down since Section 80. Yeah, all right, mate.
So how... You've been in hip-hop. You don't talk about yourself, your own hip-hop journey.
Yes. I mean, I've listened to hip-hop since I was a kid. Like somebody left a tape at my house, and then it Takes a Nation of Millions, Public Enemy. Mm. And like I just thought it was amazing. And then I've just been into hip hop ever since. And I went through like a really narrow minded phase of only listening to East Coast hip hop that comes from a certain like couple of streets.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't listen to anything else. And then it sort of broadened out. Eventually I sort of was like, oh yeah, I'll listen to some West Coast. Oh, yeah, okay. And then it's sort of you become a bit more grown up about it. I love it because I grew up listening to exclusively that, and you get locked into that certain period of your life. What music you listen to stays with you forever, and that for me was exclusively hip-hop. So now the result of that is that I will listen to other music, but no music hits me like hip-hop hits me. You know, doing the podcast for me has opened my eyes a little bit, because I always loved hip-hop, but I'd always, any new hip-hop that came out, I wanted it to sound like, I'd only listen to the new hip-hop that sounded like the old hip-hop, do you know what I mean? Like, so, and now doing the podcast, you know, like, I know you've had Asim on this podcast, when I was chatting to Asim, like, he's somebody that listens to new stuff, and listens to new, different stuff, and it sort of made me start to realise, I'm not going to like all of it, and there's big branches of hip-hop that I'm never, ever going to get into. That's the truth of it.
Mumble rap.
Yeah, correct. I think it's shit and should be made illegal. But
the thing with it is it's all about context. Yes. So if I'm playing it in a club, you really understand like why it exists and how it moves people and how it sounds sick.
Yeah.
So it's all about context. I hated Rick Ross until BMF came out, and then I played it in a club. I mean, obviously, Hustling was sick, but BMF was, you know, that tune came out and you saw how people reacted to it. You listen to it in like shitty headphones. You're like, BMF is the worst song ever. Rick Ross is terrible.
Yeah.
Listen to it in a club and everyone is singing that hook.
Yes.
That song has meaning.
Yeah. You know what I mean? But I think that the thing for hip hop fans is that there's a little bit of a dichotomy in being a hip hop fan, because one of the reasons that we love hip hop is because it changes. So it's such an exciting genre of music because it changes so rapidly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being a hip hop fan, you grow up as a snob. Do you know what I mean? And like people have got to be real and music's got to be quality. So what that means is when a new thing happens, you sort of don't want to embrace it initially because you go, is this real? Is this proper hip hop? Do you know what I mean? I don't know if I should give this a chance. Yeah. And then it took me so fucking long to even accept Southern hip hop as a fit. Like I was like, fuck you, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to listen to any of this shit.
Yeah.
And then eventually I think I listened to one thing. It's like you're saying, you still go, oh, this is all right.
Yeah.
And then eventually like, oh, actually I've been a prick this whole time. Do you know what I mean? But I know, what you mean.
For me, hip hop's always been such a personal thing. And like, you know, back in the day in like the '90s or whatever, when we were going to school and we had our Walkman and whatnot, it was like you felt like you were the only one who had fucking Hard to Earn, Lab Cab in California. Yeah. And so when you listen to fucking DMX Slipping, you really like it was like a big thing for you.
Yeah.
Now with everything being so global and without having to go to vinyl shops and stuff, which is fine because everything changes, like you say, it means that we all kind of listen to the same shit, but then what we have now is pressure that we all have to like Drake. We all have to like Kendrick. We all have to not like mumble rap if we're over 30. We all have to, you know what I mean? And so I kind of resent that, but I try and just keep it personal. And the thing I like about being a grown man and listening to it now is I'm like, this Drake song's wicked.
Yeah.
I still don't really like him.
Yeah,
I still
think
he's a wet flannel. But like what, he makes some amazing songs and
great
so
songs,
it's great
man.
I can listen to him and some, you know, there's so many different artists now that we can pick and choose and that's the beautiful thing, but it's hard not to get caught up in this, in just following what's going on and you know.
Who is your go-to artist of all time, your go-to rapper of all time?
Holy wow.
Sorry, I'm just gonna do this before we
Holy
go.
Shit.
I got like five minutes before we have the
fucking
piss break. I wanna fucking
hell,
know.
Mate.
I've had like 1.5 vodkas, I'm ready for this.
My go-to artist of all time?
Yeah, that's it, man.
I mean,
come on now.
It's impossible to say one.
Okay, give
but
me a top.
Like,
five. I warned Ramesh about this.
No, I mean, you've got like, you know, your personal favorites. I got some, you know, Slick Rick is someone who just is personal to me. I just love Slick, you know what I mean? And
first name
but
basis.
At the same time, when I'm the artist I probably listen to most, if you look to my Spotify, probably be Nas.
Okay.
Probably be Nas. You know, you got Redman and people like that I seem to go for. I find it very interesting seeing who stands the test of time. And I always go back and check for the old albums. And
Redman is somebody that I think is one of the greatest of all time.
Definitely.
And
personality, cadence.
Yeah. I just think he just doesn't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? And I love that.
Yeah.
I love listening to somebody who feels like they don't care if I like them or not. Do you know what I mean? And Redman has that.
If you came to this thinking we weren't going to nerd the fuck out about hip hop, then you are sorely mistaken. So what? So who else is in your top five? That's what I want to know. Because I feel like we have this chat a lot, but it changes.
I mean, you know, you've got UK.
So for me, it's Tupac for all five slots.
Well,
in the
for
top
me,
five.
I would actually abbreviate that to Machiavelli.
Right. Okay.
Because that album was by far the best, my favorite album of his. You know.
Oh, that fuck guy, off, mate.
He's back. He's
that
back.
Fucking one clap cunt's back.
This absolute bell end. Fuck off. I hate you, man.
Snuck in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always got my UK guys that, like, you know,
the
part of the fabric
up,
of me, like Chester P, Skinny Man.
Oh, my God.
Do you know what I mean? Them lot, like, really, like, I hold them up there with Redman and Slick.
Of course.
And Nas and, you know... Yeah, definitely some Tupac. I really feel that Kendrick is another one of them. He feels like he really feels special in that way, man.
The reason that Kendrick is respected as much as he is partly because he has diverged outside of hip hop. And what I mean by that is you listen to How to Pimp a Butterfly, and that album, it sort of takes on influences that arguably there are people I know that don't like that
come
like
on
hip-hop fans
who doesn't like that
there's I've got I know loads of people that think that they say to me when he did that album I've stopped being a Kendrick fan. Man. Like they're genuinely people that, and because
is their favorite band Take That? Is that why?
but I tell you why though, because they think that Kendrick reached outside of hip hop, and that, right. and so that is, as a hip hop fan, that's insulting.
But I think
he's been revered for reaching outside of hip hop. You want your artists to be revered because they're fucking hardcore hip hop.
But I think the essence of hip hop, which comes from sampling, is to embrace everything of all different types of genres.
Yes. Even if it is jazzmatazz.
Precisely. Even if it's jazzmatazz. And that is the perfect time to break for the piss break. Before you go, we're going to take 15 minutes. And when we come back, we might do a little Q&A. So if you have any questions for these two lovely people here, I'll be coming out in the crowd and asking those.
Is that
and
usual?
Also, we will be doing a shot together. So,
and also, one clap is going to be brought back to the dressing room to have the shit kicked out of it. That's the other thing that's going to happen.
We'll be back in 15 minutes, all right?
15 minutes.
Welcome back to the Thanks for Trying podcast, the second half. Did everyone have a good piss? That was good. So those that listen to the podcast, do you guys listen to the podcast? Make some noise! Well, no, after the halftime break, it is tradition that I'm very serious about to have a shot of tequila. So what I've done is, make some noise for Seb over here recording the show. So what Seb has done, he has poured tequila shots for a lot of people. So what we're going to do, all three of us...
I like the way you didn't say everyone there.
Not every... That guy who clapped on his own.
I know who it was, brother.
He's
you
not
know
getting a
too.
Fucking shot. So what we're going to do now is we're all going to hand out the shots to you guys. Don't fucking drink them. You wait.
Do we have to move or do we do it from
now?
No, just out of interest.
No, we got to move.
I don't want
to. So what we're
going
to do now is we're going to hand out these shots to you lot and then we're going to cheers you together, all right?
Holy shit, okay.
All right, who's got one? Put it in the air. Where's Ed? We lost to Ed.
There he is.
All right, everybody, cheers. Cheers to a Sunday.
Cheers.
Also, I became an uncle 2 days ago, so...
Hey.
Cheers to my new niece. Cheers.
Wow.
Beautiful.
That's that shit tequila. That cheap shit.
I can't afford no good shit, man. Come on now. Fuck. Welcome back to the Thanks for Trying podcast.
That was horrible, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Why would you start off the second half like that? It's fucking unacceptable shit.
I started as I meant to go on.
All right.
Just terribly.
Oh, God, that was rank. Surprised right. Knobhead didn't applaud it. Too late, fuckface. I'm joking, man. I love you.
So as I wanted to ask Rom... when we were backstage earlier, you told me a story that I made you wait to tell because I was so indignant. I just did not want you to say it.
Yeah,
backstage, you said back in the day, your dad bought. Sorry, there was a factory.
So basically, what happened was is that my dad was like a bit of a Del boy, and like he was sort of constantly trying to make money from different side projects.
Yeah,
and one day. He said to me, he said, Ramesh, have you heard of FUBU? And I said, yeah. And he said, I've got... he goes...
What year was this?
Fuck, man.
That's important.
I was a kid. I mean, it was a long time ago.
1943?
Something like that. It was a fucking long time ago.
Yeah.
He said, have you heard of FUBU? And I said, yeah. Now... And then he said to me, I've got a warehouse full of it. Now, so like he bought a load of knockoff shit. So like, but the thing is, I didn't get excited because like at that time, like I wasn't, I was trying to jump on all of that kind of thing. Like I was trying to, you know, I was trying to dress hip hop and stuff like that. And ordinarily, your dad saying he's got a warehouse full of FUBU should be exciting because you think I'm now FUBU'd up for the fucking foreseeable, right?
Yeah, of course.
But the problem is that my dad had already proven himself to be a right knockoff prick because do you remember Ewings, like with a shoe, right? So I said to him, Dad, like everyone's getting Ewings, man. And he goes to me, don't worry, I know somebody that can get it. So I was like, all right, sweet. So he said, you want it, son? I get it. And so he went off and he turned up with this box wrapped up.
Yeah.
And I was so excited. And what I opened was a box of E-wings. there's this fucking...
E-dash wings.
Knockoff piece of shit. And the thing was, I opened it and my dad looked so happy that he'd done this thing for his son.
Bless.
That I fucking had to wear these pieces of shit. It was so bad. So when he said he had FUBU, I was like, okay, mate, whatever.
Yeah.
What is it, FABU or some shit like that? Anyway, I think he didn't really, he tried to sell some of it, but it was like, it was properly knocked off.
Did it look bad? Because did you wear any of it?
I did, yes, I did.
Sick!
I did wear, he wanted me to be like the brand ambassador, do you know what I mean? Like, so I did wear some of it like around Crawley and that. But the sales didn't really take off. I think that warehouse still exists. I think there's
and the
a
FUBU
warehouse
is still
somewhere
there.
Just it outside of East Grinstead that's got a shit ton of FUBU in it. It's like an Indiana Jones kind of fucking go and dig your way through there and find the treasure. Do you know what I mean? Some knockoff FUBU.
Ed, what was the worst shit that you used to wear in school? Because I know you had the
FUBU.
You had the Machino, right? The sick Machino. Because you wore it in Kill Your Friends.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, that was the kind of garage days. Ahmed's here. We used to be at Eros, Pure Silk, Garage Nation and all that. Moshed up, iceberg historied up with fucking Tweety Pie and all of that. Looking like absolute cunts. Wearing the Docklands from Camden and all of that. The Wallabies. Thinking we were Ghostface. We definitely weren't. Yeah. But yeah, that was a beautiful time. But then, yeah, I also wore a lot of baggy hip hop shit.
Had the mosh like body warmer thing.
Fucking hell!
And then I went
not
out.
Not a gilet.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. And I went out in it. I thought I was the man.
Yeah.
And then when I came back, somebody had dashed a cigarette like right in the back.
Oh,
it was bad. That was it. I threw it away.
So you threw away a Machino gilet?
Instead of fucking cigarette burning it, mate. What are you supposed to do? Man. Recycle it and give it to African kids. Fuck that. Was that the career ender?
No, that was it. That was...
No, that ain't come yet. We got time for that, bro. We got time.
So that's the end of the Thanks for Trying podcast. So as this is episode one, I've made it to season two.
Nice.
Made it to season two, all right? That's a big deal. That's a big deal. You guys don't understand. So what I wanted to do is do a segment. Do try something new. Do a segment, right?
Yeah.
Me and Ed, we were talking about this. Mm-hmm. Do a little...
This is your career ender.
This is my career ender. Don't worry.
Let's do it.
I wanted to do a thing about called Under the Patio. My new record's called Under the Patio.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be about things, you know what I mean, that really piss you off, that piss me off, because clearly, you know, I have a lot of issues. And I wanted to ask you guys what the relevant kind of punishment would be for the things that piss me off on a daily basis, right?
To the people that commit these crimes.
To the people that commit these crimes.
Sure.
All right? And I'll start out, you know, pretty tame.
Okay.
And see what you
guys
think.
How many of these are there?
800 to 900.
Okay. Oh, fucking hell.
So,
go on.
Yeah. So if we give like each one 10 to 15 minutes, then we'll be
sweet.
Good.
Are we getting paid for this?
I am. I don't know about you.
It depends on your performance.
Okay.
People who get on the train before letting people off first.
Do you know what?
I knew you guys would like this. I knew it. Ramesh, what's the appropriate punishment?
When
for
I was
this?
Young, my mum used to say to me, "Well, better than a slap round the face with a wet fish or a poke in the eye with a sharp stick." I feel like a slap round the face with a big wet fish would be great for that. If there's just a London Transport, he's got licking him with.
But
a
that
big
means
haddock.
You have to carry a wet fish with you at all times.
No, I'm not carrying it, bruv. I'm not walking around with a haddock so, in my inside pocket.
So then you have to poke him in the eye with a what?
With a little light row, no.
So, okay, so
I never thought I'd hear you say the word row. Nah, fuck that, man. Wet
I
haddock.
Felt like that wouldn't do anything apart from like, oh, what is that slight disgruntlement? That's
quite... I've got to be honest with you. I don't think that's a cut and dried case because some people take so long to get off the fucking train. Do you know what I mean?
He's one of them.
You just no. I don't mind waiting a small amount of time, but if some prick is fucking writing their memoirs before they come off, I'm getting on, mate. I don't give a shit, mate. The fucking... It's going to beep in a sec if you don't fucking come off.
What if I'm stood at the
doors?
Don't
let me pull you off, dickhead.
I'm stood at the doors waiting to come off.
Yeah.
So and
no,
and
listen, if you're stood at the doors and you come off, fine. What I don't want is to be fucking stood there while you say goodbye to the fucking rest of the Waltons before you come off the fucking train. What you want to do? Wait for you and then the doors shut on me and I look like a knobhead as it moves off to the next station? Because you can't fucking get off the fucking train, you fucking arsehole.
Okay, all right, all right. Second one, second one.
Second one, okay, all right.
Let's see if I can destroy this one.
Let's see.
See what you can do. People that don't wash the back of plates. See, I know there's a couple... I hear a couple things.
So have you got... Is there a particular... I mean, what is this? As a thing, what has happened? Who's doing that? So is this a friend of yours?
Well, I'll be real with you. Yeah. I'll be real with you. Who in here lives in shared households with random housemates?
So your housemates are not washing the back of plates?
How do you wash a plate without washing the back of a plate?
I don't know. You wash the front of it? It's a very difficult question. Do you wash the back of a plate?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, see?
If I do, I do it properly.
Ed's coming around for dinner and then washing up.
Sorry, I get that you should wash the back of the plate, but you're not going to fucking eat off it. Who's... flipping their plate over for a change.
Nah,
it's not like a pillow.
It cupboard,
it's when
bro.
They stack them.
You're not good. Oh, right, okay,
yeah,
fine.
They stack the plate.
But I just want to see who the fucking back of this plate's filthy, mate. I can't eat off that. You're not supposed to, knobhead. Turn it over. It's fucking... I want to know who the fuck is eating off the back of plates, mate. That's the biggest crime. You back plate eating motherfucker.
Also quite difficult.
Mm.
Really difficult. Yeah. Eating off of the back of a plate.
Yeah, you can't have peas. That's out of the question. Anyway, right, no, okay, I agree with you. Right. I think that's unacceptable.
Okay, cool. Thank you. I appreciate
think,
that. I've been
I think that that should be the punishment. They should eat off the back of the plate they didn't wash.
Okay. So not...
I like that.
There hasn't been a capital punishment yet.
No.
Okay, that's fine. So no one sent anyone to the death?
No.
Okay, well, how about this one? People who put the empty wrappers back in celebrations.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how... See, gallows. My man over here said gallows, yeah? I feel like that is appropriate.
I've
chop
got...
off the head, bro. Why are you putting your fucking empty wrappers back in there? I'm angry, man. I don't care.
Yeah, no, I feel that from you. What's your take on this, Ed? I've talked to
him. I can feel his anger and I don't really give a shit about celebrations and that. To be honest, bro, but I feel his anger. I don't really give a shit. Do you?
I've got to be honest, I'm vegan. And I don't eat celebrations anyway, so I think if you eat them, you should be executed. Full stop. For your disrespect to fucking what happens to cows.
How long's the vegan thing gone on for?
Like 6 years? Something like that.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's good for me to maintain being this overweight and still vegan. That's the fucking hardest achievement, mate.
How many times do you get people... Because I was a vegetarian for 27 years, I told you.
Yeah, we were chatting about that, yeah.
How many people question you about it in an aggressive manner?
Well, I think that it's true to say that I mean, veganism has got more popular, but it is sort of... people think that you're a sanctimonious twat if you become vegan, and I get that. And so when you tell people you're vegan, they go, oh, he said he's vegan. I wondered how long that was going to take. Well, it's because I don't want to eat the fucking chicken, you cunt. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's... The problem is there's animal products in loads of shit, so you can't have a go at me when I say I'm vegan. Like, do you want some chicken? No. Do you want cheese on toast? No. Do you want a milky coffee? No. Why are you being so fussy? I'm vegan. Oh, fucking hell. I wondered when you bring it up. It's because I don't want to eat this shit, mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I do understand. The truth is, I do understand it from non-vegans' point of view, is that, like, it's the same thing as, like, religion, I guess, is that you don't want it rammed down your throat. Now, I personally think that, you know, if I'm being absolutely honest with you, if you push me on it, I think that everybody should try and move towards a more vegan lifestyle. That's the honest truth of it, me being sort of, jokes aside.
How dare you preach to us?
Yes, but I wouldn't tell you that. I'm not going to get annoyed if somebody eats meat in front of me. Like, you know, because the truth is everybody's free to live their own life. The problem I've got is that some vegans think that by militantly just fucking having a go at people about it. Like, I remember they're trying to do this meat-free Mondays thing where they're trying to encourage people to eat less meat, right? Mm. So I got asked if I would like sort of, I don't know, tweet about how, what difference is that going to make? But they're asking me if I was going to tweet about it. And then there's loads of vegans going, you shouldn't be supporting this because, you know, they're still eating meat for the rest of the week. And you just go like, dude, nobody's going to fucking... Do you know what
so
I mean?
You got don't beef be ISIS both sides.
About veganism. Do you know what I mean? Like, just fucking chill out. It's still good if you do Meat Free Monday, just because they're not going fucking full vegan. Just chill it, mate. Do you know what I mean? You're making a dick of yourself, mate. They protest. Vegans protested against me at a gig, right? So, so listen. Let me tell you what happened, right?
I'm so confused. What,
mate? I'll tell you what.
What?
This shit got real, right?
Oh, so, come on, man.
So basically what happened was, is a mate of mine, he nearly died of a heart attack, right? And he said to me, I'm doing this gig for the British Heart Foundation because they did so much for me and I want to do something to give back because they helped me to... So he goes, can you just do this gig? I said, yeah, of course. I was free. I said, yeah, I'll do the gig. So anyway, I'm due to do the gig, like maybe the night before I'm due to do the gig, I fucking check Twitter... And my timeline is full of vegans just going, what is this about you doing a British Heart Foundation gig? They test on animals. You're an arsehole, right? We demand that you withdraw from the gig immediately, right? And then they started posting like pictures of beagles, like dogs with their throat slit and going, this is what the British Heart Foundation do, right? So Jesus. It was fucking like my timeline was full.
Pick
like,
your battles, man.
It looked like I'd done a Pornhub search for slaughtered beagles. Like, it was insane. Right, so...
Is that a category on Pornhub? Yeah.
If you go really... If you go on the dark web, you can find it.
If you slaughtered really, beagles. Yeah,
if you really... I was about to go career ender.
Listen. Yeah, that's just,
So anyway...
I know what I'm doing when I get home.
So anyway, I was like, what the fuck? And then I looked on my Facebook, the fan page or whatever.
Yeah.
And they just posted loads of pictures of slaughtered dogs all over every... So I'd gone like, I'm on Have I Got News For You next week? And then underneath, 27 pictures of beagles with their throat slit, going, Ramesh endorses this, blah, blah, blah. So they were saying... So I was getting loads of messages going, you've lost support from the vegan community and we're never going to come to one of your gigs again and what are you doing, blah, blah, blah. So I sort of thought to myself, well, I could withdraw from this, like... But the truth is, they've sold tickets and I've said that I'm doing it. Two, this guy's trying to do a good thing. Mm. And three, I don't want to reward that behaviour. That's the truth of it. So I went ahead and did the gig and they fucking protested. So I turned up.
What do you mean they protested?
They had like a load of vegans turned up outside the gig with like a banner saying, why is Ramesh doing this gig? And they're trying to stop people from going into the gig. So just...
Hold on, did you actually say, why is Ramesh
something
doing
like that.
This?
It said something like that. So...
But you are vegan.
I know. And like, so it's like I was going to go on stage and for 20 minutes just kill dogs. That was my act. Just fucking gut beagles, like left, right and centre. Anyway, the point I'm making is that I just think there's a way of doing it. And that is not the way.
I feel like those vegans that do that are the new converts.
Yeah, because there's hardcore guys that were like eating dry Weetabix for like 17 years. and they're not like that. They're just very chilled out and they're just they're like, the if you want to do it, it's cool. It's all these new tofu eating motherfuckers.
So that's the end of the section under the...
No! You've got more, haven't you? Come on.
I have a list of a few
go
more.
Go on.
Does anyone want one more? All right, okay, here we go. I'm going to see with the most offensive. People who say the word hollybobs to describe a holiday, come on!
Who say what?
Hollybobs.
Never heard it in my life.
Come on, because you're not on social media, bro.
You are so blessed.
Yeah, I feel it. Hollybobs.
That is a straight death penalty, man.
People are dropping hollybobs.
Hollybobs.
It's a real thing.
Do you know what? I don't know. I don't know what's more offensive. Saying hollybobs or when people go, three sleeps till. Those people need to be fucking executed. Three sleeps till Portugal. How about one long fucking sleep?
Forever.
Oh, mate.
Hollybobs.
Does my head in, man.
They're almost as bad as the people on socials that go, I'm just out with this one. This one. What do you mean this one? To describe their partner? Come on now. This one.
Oh, mate. I think death penalty.
All right. Well, I just spilled my drink.
Oh,
so that's
my
all right.
God.
Someone get this man a shot. Hold on.
But it's so perfectly spilt on the next question. Ed, I want to talk to you about Alita.
Yes.
So this is Ed's new film that's now coming out in December.
Yeah. Number 6.
And this is Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And produced by James Cameron.
Yep.
Co-starring Christopher Waltz.
You've not just seen a speedboat on The Price is Right. All right, I don't know. What the fuck is up with these people? And Bully's special prize. Fucking hell, mate. This crowd, I don't get their responses to shit. Anyway,
brand new film. What? Because you play a robot, a villain robot,
a cyborg.
Mm. This, okay, that's a better name for it. A villain robot, aka cyborg. You play a cyborg. What the fuck was it like doing that? Do you have to wear a green suit?
Nah, so I look like a Teletubby. Actually, it's amazing. I was out there the whole time in a mocap suit. So every day, instead of putting on, you know, a suit or chainmail or whatever silly stuff I normally put on, I put on this like grey onesie, yeah, basically. And they made me these Nikes which had all this Velcro over the top, and then I'd go and get motion, 20 minutes of calibration for the motion capture every day. And it was like, I knew I had a CGI six pack, so I was just eating that Texas, that Austin brisket, bruv. You know what I mean? There was no
so
vegan
shooting,
life out there, bruv.
You were shooting in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
And obviously the first question I always text you whenever you start shooting a new film, mm-hmm, is not about the co-stars, it's not about anything else, it's what is the catering like?
I sent you that picture, right?
You sent me a picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think there's anything more important than the catering.
They are anti-vegan out there, I think, bruv. Yeah. You would not be happy on that set.
And who were you working alongside with in your scenes? Was it Christopher Waltz in that, or who were you working with?
Yeah, Christoph was in the scenes. A lot of the time it was the lead actress, Rosa Salazar.
It's one of the big eyes.
Exactly.
Right,
Kian Johnson, who came to the last podcast with me. I brought him out on the sly.
He came to this?
Yeah, he was
sitting
there.
You didn't even tell me that.
He was sitting in the back row on the sly. And yeah, it was cool, man.
That's elite. And when's it coming out? How come it got pushed back from July until December?
I'm not sure, you know. Like I say, like the baton's been passed on. They're running away with it. I just watched them run, you know what I mean? And go, okay.
And have you watched the trailer for Deadpool 2?
Yes.
What do you think?
Yeah, do you know what? I just love the franchise as a whole. I love the characters.
Dude, can I just say, I've got to say, you were so sick in that film, man.
Thank you, man.
I just, honestly, you were so... Mate.
Incredible.
Honestly, I was buzzing to meet you off the back of that. Like, you were so sick. And Deadpool's a great... But,
it's
mate, you're
film.
So fucking... You're such a cunt in that film. Yes. That's what I loved about it. Do you know what I mean? Because I was like... This
well, I joke about that. I'm
fucking cold.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just
it's
a
great.
Fucking wanker. And you were torturing him. And you felt like he's getting a hard-on about how... bad he was gonna have it. I'm a comic book fan, man, so like I'm fucking harsh on that shit. And yeah, you've killed it, mate. Honestly, you're so good. I'm buzzing.
Big up Ed, man.
You're
every
so
time.
Good.
It was amazing.
Now, we joke about like that's definitely enough compliments, but yeah, we joke about you know that I'm like rent a cunt wherever I go. I said that to Robert Rodriguez on the first day. I was like, I'm rent a cunt. Look at me.
Do you Do you ever feel typecast for it?
No, because I there's 50 Shades of Cunt. You know what I mean? That's me. And so you know, you see me in Alita, and I'm cunting it proper,
right.
But it's cyborg cunting it. And then you know, I did a film later in the year with Barry Jenkins, the Moonlight director. Do you know what I mean? And it's a whole other shade of cunt. And then so I've, you know,
would you ever be in a rom com?
Of course, and in fact, I'm in one this year.
Either
are you really
out
in a rom-com?
Yeah, it's a film called Patrick that is, the lead character Patrick is a pug.
Oh.
I'm not in a romantic relationship with him, but yeah. So there's so many great British comedians in it, and you know, when I stepped into it, I was like, you know, all I can play, you can see from tonight, all I am is the straight guy to the funny guy. Same in Deadpool with Ryan, you know, it was like, I know I can operate in that straight guy format, but yeah, that was fun. I like to try all these different things and try as much as I can. And
I never got a call for that film. A lot of great British comedians, I never even got a fucking phone call, mate. Do you know, I was supposed to be in The Martian. Let me tell you this fucking story. Let me tell you this fucking story, bruv.
And another thing.
Let me tell you this story.
All right. I'm ready.
So my agent called me and said they want you to read for The Martian, right?
Yeah.
And listen.
For Matt Damon's character?
No. No, they wanted me to play some Bud Ding Ding that's like... right. That's into the so- like at the screen. Do you know what I mean? Just going, ah, I don't think that should be there. And so. So I turned up for the audition, right? They just need a brown guy to be at a computer screen. Fine.
Yeah.
I can fucking do that. I'm going to be in The Martian. So I turn up, and the woman there, the casting director, she goes to me. She goes to me, okay, we ready? You want to sit down there and you pretend the screen is there? And I went, all right, sweet. And then I said, do you want me to do it British or American? Right? Because I've got both in my locker.
Thank you, bro.
All right? She said to me...
All two of them.
She goes to me, why don't you do both and we'll see what Ridley prefers.
Right?
So at that point, my balls twinged, right? Because I thought, holy fucking shit, bro. Ridley's going to watch this and I might be in the fucking Martian, right? So I go, okay, well, why don't I try American first?
Yeah.
And then I do British afterwards. Yeah. Right? So she goes, all right, sweet.
What could go wrong, innit?
Yeah, what could go wrong? Well, I'll tell you, Ed. What could go wrong? I start doing the American, and my American accent is so shit that she starts laughing at my audition, right? She starts corpsing. So I go...
I kind of want to hear this.
No, I can't.
Listen to...
Hold on.
Listen to the people.
Listen
to the people.
Come on, bro.
Come on now.
Ramesh, give them what they need, bro.
Basically, it's something like, I don't believe he should be in that sector.
Anyway, I've heard more
dialogue than that, right? I'm going to fucking go into it. Fucking end my career, because Ridley might have gone, he's 2% away from getting the part. Anyway, so... So she starts corpsing. I go, she'll have another go. And she went, yeah? And another go, she starts cracking up again.
Yeah.
So I finish, and then I go, I'm not going to bother doing the British thing. Because this is fucking over, isn't it? And she goes, yeah.
Oh.
So then I came out of the room, and I phoned my agent, and I said, not only have I not got a part in The Martian... But you need to not put me up for anything that involves that involves any of those people ever again. Because I have... Not only have I burnt those bridges, I fucking bombed them, mate. I bombed those bridges and then I came back and took a piss on them when they were ashen.
It's the only way to go.
That's my movie career.
If you've ruined it, you may as well ruin it properly.
Exactly, mate. I fucked it. Anyway, I hope that...
How many of these things do you go up for?
I went up for Mary Poppins 2.
Yeah.
Okay.
When did they make Mary Poppins sue it?
I saw the trailer. Emily Blunt,
I never got the call for that, bro.
It looks dead, bro. Fuck that.
So, listen, genuinely, I hope that film fucking flops.
What accent did you do in Mary Poppins? What character
did you go for? I went British. I wasn't going to fuck up like that again.
Yeah.
In fact, I even offered them Indian. Do you know what I mean? Just, maybe they go, Mary Poppins, what the fuck? Do you know what I mean? I just throw a little bit of extra comedy in. Anyway, I fucked that up as well. The other film I did, because I've got a movie career, fuck you, Ed. I was in Age of Cannibals. Do you know that film? It's a German independent movie. I'm so I don't even know why I'm talking about this, because I've got to be honest with you.
You've had a beer and a half.
Somebody messaged me saying they've seen it, and I said, can you please not tell anyone that I'm in that fucking film? So when I started doing stand-up, they... My agent at the time called me and said, there's this German film and they're interested in seeing you for the part. So I'm all right. So it's filming in Düsseldorf.
Mm.
So they weren't in England. I had to do a Skype audition, right? I had to play an Indian businessman, right? So I Skype this guy, and he goes, let's see what your Indian accent is like. And I said, okay. And I sort of wobble-headed my way through the audition. And at the end of it, he goes, I must be honest, I don't know what Indian accent sounds like, but you've got the part. So I'm fucking in the film. 3 days in Dusseldorf, and I'm getting paid for that shit, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? You must have felt the same when you got Deadpool, right? So, don't fucking don't ooh like I just dissed a man. Do you know what I mean? Don't fucking make me look like an arsehole. I'm bigging him up. This fucking audience, bruv.
I don't know where they've come from, man.
Fucking
I'm sorry.
Wankers,
I'm sorry,
mate.
We should have got rid of that guy.
Let me explain what happened there. I was making a joke about how this man's movie career is up here and I haven't got one. And you went, ooh, like I was dissing it. Fuck you, man. Anyway, so.
You got to get rid of that guy.
I'm doing this film in Dusseldorf.
Okay, cool.
Right? So in this film, I've got to lose my temper and slap my servant. Right. Right? And they got... So they basically, honestly, this is how I remember it. They go, this is your servant. And a box opened and this Indian boy like came out. I swear to you, mate, he just fucking emerged, right? So they said to me, you can't just slap a kid. Mm. We've got a stunt coordinator to make sure that you do the slap properly. So they go, can you go downstairs? And so I go downstairs and in this room is a stunt coordinator, this Indian boy, and then me. It's like a little tiny fucking room. And then the stunt coordinator goes, slaps this boy. So I fucking pimp-handed him, right?
Talcum powder and everything, innit?
I was like, you better have my fucking money! So I just slapped him. And then the stunt coordinator goes, that is good. And that was it. So anyway, that's not the worst thing that happened, man. Because
Hold on. What's this movie called again? Because we all got to go and watch it.
I need to see this.
What's it called?
It's called Age of Cannibals, right?
Age of Cannibals.
Right? So then, I'm so fucking... I'll be honest with you. I'm telling you this story, but I'm experiencing regret about telling it because I sort of want it to disappear. But anyway.
Yeah, you should, bud, but keep digging. Go on.
But so anyway, so Ed knows this better than I do. So I'd never done any filming at this point, right? So you've got to do, they do it from here, then they do it from there, then they do it from here. Like, so there's so many fucking times. So anyway, so they do my close-up and then they're doing the scene on the other two. There's like two or three other guys in the office. Mm. And like they're filming, and I'm slapping this kid every time, like, fuck you, bastard! And then slapping this kid.
Like connecting.
Yeah, connecting. Because the guy told me his ass is good. So I thought, man. I assume that's fine. Anyway, this is the fucking worst thing. One of the producers comes up to me after we've been doing this scene for about 40 minutes. He goes, actually, for the last hour, you're not even on camera. So I've been slapping this fucking kid. And I'm not even in the fucking shot. I've been trying to stay consistent.
Wow.
And I've been slapping this fucking kid for no reason.
This poor guy.
Yeah. Anyway, if that kid's listening, I'm sorry, bro.
That's heartbreaking, man.
I know.
Fuck.
I know.
So, of course, Ed, back in the day, you were a rapper.
Yes, man.
Yes, sir. One clap. Fuck you. And it weren't even
still,
a one clap cunt over there.
It's
you.
A different guy.
Fuck both of you. Go on.
We kicked that guy out and then there's another one. Do you ever miss rapping?
Not in the slightest. I love being on the other side of the speaker. I think we spoke about this before. But, you know, there's people like fucking Koji Radical, Ocean Wisdom, Cass is Dead. Mm. You know, these people here that are doing incredible things and they're doing it better than me. You know, I look at them and I sit in the studio with them nowadays and I go to the studio with the Beggars and with you and everything and, you know, we were there with Takura like week before last and I watch people in the studio and I think, yeah, you're supposed to be here. You know, this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
This is not what I was supposed to be doing. And when I'm on set, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. So,
you feel like that's more of a calling? Like,
Yeah. And that was my calling back in the day, but it's not my calling at all now. It's not at all.
And so that ticks the boxes for you. When you're in front of camera, when you've got a director there, when you have a script, that's it for you.
Yeah, but you know, this year I've ventured into directing as well. So I've directed my first short film that I wrote as well. And so that's a whole new realm that I'm excited to enter and that I really enjoyed, but it's fucking, you know, like we were talking about how labor intensive it is to be involved, you know, to not just be a performer. And so that's been a real eye opener to me, but it's definitely something I want to do again in the future. And you know, yeah, that I enjoyed and tick those boxes and really move me. And it's certainly where I'm supposed to be. So yeah, I'm excited to direct again, but it's gonna be the right thing.
That's beautiful.
that was a beautiful moment,
it was,
right?
It's honestly a beautiful
really
nice. Moment.
I really liked it.
I was gonna try and rinse you. I was gonna try and say it, but I was like, you know what?
I really liked it.
There's not, there's, you know. It's
yeah, that was patronizing.
It was really beautiful.
What I'm gonna do now is the annual Q&A. Moment of the Q&A. Does anyone here have a question?
I can't see anything.
If there's any, you know what?
Yeah, I'm switching mics.
Thanks. I'm going to point this one at Ron, but for all three of you, recently, what's the best and worst places you've been?
Oh.
Wow.
Do you want to go first?
No.
Okay, so I did this. I'm doing this show. I've just finished filming this show for BBC Two called... we haven't decided fully what we're going to call it. At the moment, it's called Romesh's Really Rough Guide. And it's where we go to places that British people don't tend to visit. So since the new year, I've been to Haiti, Albania, and Ethiopia.
Wow.
And Haiti I found difficult. So basically, let me tell you what happened. So I came back from LA on Christmas Eve, and then on the 3rd of January, I flew to Haiti to do this show. So I was, I'll be honest with you, I was pissed off that I hadn't been home very long, right? Yeah. So I was already sort of angry. And so I got to Heathrow and I had to meet the producers and everything like that. And I knew a couple of the guys that were on the show. And we had to fly to Miami and then change to Haiti. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that's the worst thing that's ever happened to anyone. That's quite a luxurious situation to be in. But I went to Haiti. When we were at Miami, just about to get on the plane to Port-au-Prince, which is Haiti's capital, and this woman said to me, I guess we just looked like outsiders, me and the producer. And she said, what are you doing? Why are you going to Haiti? And I couldn't be asked to say it as a TV show. So I just said, we're going on holiday. And she goes, you're joking. And I said, no, we're just going on holiday. We're going to go check it out. And then she goes, you're going to die. She goes, you're going to fucking die. And I was like, the fuck is it? This is as we're going onto the plane, right? And I said, what's up? She goes, I know four people that were killed at cash machines in the last 6 months. You're going to fucking die, right? And the show that we're doing, we're not doing that thing where, like, you film and then you fuck off to a really nice hotel. They want it to be authentic, which essentially means you stay in shit places, right? But I'm not allowed to go on about it too much because it sounds ungrateful. But where I stay was a fucking hole, right? So we stayed in... So she goes...
I feel like I've watched Anthony Bourdain in Haiti, right?
Right.
And he, like, Sean Penn's there. There's just random people.
No. That's not how it went down for me. Right, so
good food, though.
So she said to me... No. Dude, okay. let me tell you about the fucking food, right? So, obviously, Haiti, they don't do vegan, all right? So I had spaghetti with tomato sauce twice a day, every day, for 2 weeks, right? On the last day... We finished and they said, Rom, listen, man, I know you've had the same meal. You've done very, very well. Let's take you to a nice place. So we went to some nice place that had fucking like other vegetarian options. They had pumpkin soup. I said to the waiter, is the pumpkin soup got dairy in it? He goes, no, mate, it's not got dairy. He didn't say mate. He said,
no, mate, it ain't, no.
He said, nah, bruv, there's no fucking dairy in this. Yep. I said to him, all right, wicked. I said, can I have the pumpkin soup? And he goes, all right. So he went off. We waited. I'm excited. It's the first hot meal I'm having in 2 weeks that doesn't have spaghetti and tomato sauce in it. He comes back and he goes, here you go. I go, this looks amazing. He goes, I double checked. There's no dairy in it. Just to let you know, there is a little bit of goat. I said to him, have you thought about calling it pumpkin and goat soup? Because that'll solve a lot of these fucking issues. Anyway, I had spaghetti. That was the only other thing I could have. Let me be honest. Haiti is a country that has had a very bad time of it. And it's you know, it's the other half of the island of the Dominican Republic. You know, it's next door to Dominican Republic. Dominican Republic is an amazing holiday destination. Haiti isn't. And the reason Haiti isn't is because it's impoverished. And then they got hit by the earthquake. So that country is fucked. So it would be remiss of me to just go, it's terrible to go there. It's beautiful. But the truth of it is, it's been very unlucky. And so you can't, it's very difficult for me to go, I'm going to stay here on this beach and have a great time, when just nearby there is a lot of poverty, some of the worst poverty I've ever seen. So that was a difficult place to go to. All three of the countries I went to, there were surprises. If you want to go as a tourist, there's lots of nice things about those places, but there are also lots of negative things about those places. What that experience did show me is that actually we should be a bit more open to the places we go and visit. Yeah. That's the honest truth of it. But so there you go. That's it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the least articulate things I've said tonight.
No,
so
great.
For you to applaud that is almost an insult.
I did a show in a Palestinian refugee camp in Lebanon.
Okay. It's not Top Trumps, mate.
And I went there. But if it was, I'd win.
Yeah, go on. What happened?
But same. I was a vegetarian at the time.
Yeah.
And there was that point where it was like it was goat stew or something, and it was take out the goat and have the rest of the stew. I'm like, you're not gonna complain, man. Come on, you're in a place where in someone's household where they've prepared you something with love and care.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
So Ed, what's your answer to that question?
Obviously, I'm only gonna say the best place. But I'll say like Austin, Texas, man. I was there during Trump's inauguration, so obviously, you know, I was thinking, you know, people may not share the same views on, you know, life and humanity as me, I'll say lightly.
But Austin's a safe haven in Texas.
Yeah, it was amazing, man. It was so beautiful, and it was such an open-minded place, and I had a great time out there.
It blows my mind that Texas was open-minded.
Yeah, I know.
Because you're a stereotype of that place.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah.
And I went to LA. Like, as you know, I wrote this article about it. I went to LA and I'd been sort of told that LA was super liberal. And I had a great time there, actually. I loved LA. But I had a few fucking weird experiences as a brown person in that town. Like, I talked about this in the article, so I apologise if you've read the article, but I'm going to...
Please do.
So basically, one of the producers of the documentary that I was doing out there, we went out for dinner, right? And he's got kids, and I've got kids, and my wife went, and we all sat, and the kids were all playing and stuff like that. And he's a white Jewish guy, right? I'm telling you that because it's relevant to the story, all right? So, so we're sitting having dinner, kids are getting on and shit, and then we have our meal, we finish dinner... And then this woman comes over and she goes, I'm not going to do the accent. She goes, I just wanted to let you... She's an American woman. She goes, I just wanted to let you know...
No, your American accent...
No, dude,
good,
I don't, listen.
Do the American accent. The people
No,
want
because
it.
There might be a Martian too. Yeah, do you know what I mean? I don't know, fuck it up.
Wow.
Do it, man, do it.
This woman comes over...
What does she say?
She goes, oh, my God. She goes, this is what America is about. And she goes, I've been watching you all night. And I was like, okay. It's fucking weird. And then she goes, this is incredible. This is what America is about. She goes, you, a white man, and you, a brown man, and you're having dinner, and it's nothing. Like, you're just talking to each other, and you're laughing, and your kids are playing, and this is what America's about.
But it's become something because she's talked about it.
So she was like, so she started just going on and on and on about how amazing this was and how people don't think that white people and people of color can get on. And we were proof of that is not the case. And she said, I said to my husband, I'm going to talk to him. And he said, don't. And what? And I was like, you should have listened to your husband. Anyway.
Oh my!
So she comes over and she says that. She goes, and I'm a Republican.
Oh,
and
come
I'm a
on!
Republican. So I was like, okay, fine. So then she left, and then we had a conversation about like, because the truth is, I don't know how to feel about that because, like, my wife, she said, actually, that's kind of sweet Because I said, what the fuck, right? And my wife said to me, well, Rom, the way that you've got to see it is that she's coming from a different... She's coming at this from a different perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a time when she would have found that difficult to accept, maybe, or people that she knows find that difficult to accept. And now she saw that happening and she found it... She was like, holy shit, this actually is great and a beautiful thing and I want to go and tell them. And I said, okay, but... I'm just having fucking dinner. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're not making a political statement here. Do you know what I mean? I don't want the fact that... I mean, I'm married to a white woman. And let me tell you, brown guys, it's magical. Right? No, no, I'm joking. I'm joking. But the I'm joking. Is that the career ender?
No. That's it.
That ain't the career ender. That ain't the
career ender.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking.
You did that about half an hour ago.
No, I'm joking. No, but the truth is, I don't want... my relationship or me going to... Like, that's not a fucking political statement. I'm just having dinner. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, for
but
me...
But that's almost similar to what you were saying in the Guardian article a couple of days ago, where you said you didn't want a film, the Wrinkle in Time film, to be deemed as...
Listen...
As a politicised thing. You want it to be a great film in its own regard or a bad film in its own regard.
Yeah, well, listen, people sort of misunderstood me in that. Well, some people on Twitter have misunderstood me on that article. The point I was making was is that all of the publicity I saw for that film was about how it was great that there was a diverse cast and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's wonderful. And I don't think there's enough of that in Hollywood. And I genuinely do believe that.
Yeah.
Fuck's sake. Like, that was the real
time. I've tried my best. Yeah. I've tried my best. I'm sorry.
But
I'm sorry.
My argument in relation to that is we should not be going on about that. We should just be talking about, you know, people that don't celebrate diversity or don't want to see that happen, they should not be presented this, in my opinion, as a thing like, this is what's happening now. We're doing this diverse film. That film should just be fucking delivered and you deal with it. Do you know what I mean? That is how the world is now. Do you know what I mean? We're doing diverse casting and it should be happening more. That film should not be a cause.
Yeah.
You watched A Wrinkle in Time because you watch A Wrinkle in Time and you judge it. It's either good or it's bad in your opinion. But what I think is that the publicity for that film is all about the diversity of it. And then if you're some racist fucking wanker who sits and watches that and sees the publicity of it, and then you don't like the film, you go, that's what happens when you're diverse. Do you know what I mean? That's what fucking happens. So I just think, you just deal with it. There's black people in films, deal with it. There's brown people in films. There's a brown guy that can't do an American accent in a film. Fucking deal with it. Just fucking deal with it. There's no fanfare. There's no fanfare. There's no celebration of it. That's how it fucking is, mate. And if you can't deal with it, then you're out of touch. That's your fucking problem, not ours.
It's true.
That's how I feel.
I agree. I'm going to walk over to the... Oh, there's a couple of questions over here.
It's for Rom, actually.
Mr. Rom. Oh, God.
Going back to your teaching days, could you give us a story about the worst pupil that you've ever taught?
I didn't used to teach you, did I?
Good question.
I was actually very sort of chilled out teacher. I sort of didn't really... I don't recall a time when I raised my voice as a teacher because I didn't care. It's very difficult because the truth... So basically, when I first started teaching, I taught at a very good school and I ended up being head of sixth form at this school in Crawley, and the school was like Ofsted rated outstanding and blah, blah, blah.
Someone ooed at that.
Someone pulled out their handbags on
someone
you,
bro. Ooed at that. Ofsted.
I'm not
bro.
Saying it as an achievement. I'm just fuck saying that's where I worked.
When Corin said that he DJ'd for Guru, like proper name drop, we didn't hear that. Ooh.
No,
he said,
no one did that. No one did that.
Oh, someone's making that Ofsted money. Fucking fuck off, mate. How am I getting pinned down for that? Anyway, so the reason I mention that is because after I've been working there for about... I've been working there for about 5 years or something, and I decided to move to a school that's more challenging, right? Because I thought, like, this school is, like, is good, and this is not the reason I got into teaching. The reason I got into teaching is I really wanted to help people. Honestly, I mean, that sounds noble and wanky, but that is genuinely the reason I got into teaching, because you don't get into it for the money, right? So... I applied for the shittest school in the area that I could. It had just come out of special measures. And so I applied to that school. Ooh, fuck off. Right, so it just came out of special measures. Yes. My experience of teaching in that school, like, it was the most difficult time I've had in my professional life. Because, at the other school I was teaching at, you'd walk into a classroom, kids would stand up, right? Everyone calls you sir. You say something, right? So, like, my first day at this new school, right, I went in there with my fucking Ofsted outstanding attitude, thinking I'm about to show these guys a thing or two, like fucking Michelle Pfeiffer in Dangerous Minds. Just like I'm going to come in here and sort the school out, do you know what I mean? And, like, it really taught me a lesson, right? Because my first day, I was teaching these, like, year nines, and, like, somebody said to me, that's the most difficult class in this school, right, that year nine group. But then I went into the classroom, and they just didn't give a fuck. Like, they properly didn't give a fuck. And it was an hour lesson. It took me 45 minutes to get them to sit down. That's not an exaggeration. So I was just going, guys, 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 guys. And then I start crying, guys, 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 guys. So eventually...
Ed's laughing because he knows how many teachers have said that to us.
I was a teacher myself, you know what I mean? I know.
That's so right. I got them sat down, and it was a terrible first lesson with them, right? And then at the end of the day, I had to do playground duty, where I had to make sure the kids left. I had to make sure the kids left the site properly and orderly. And this kid was riding his bike. You're not supposed to ride your bike on a school site. So I said to him, excuse me, mate, I was really fucking chilled. Like, I was trying to be, like, all, like, matey. You know that teacher that's like, hey, call me Gary? Yeah. I was being that wanker, right? So I've gone, hey, man, it'd be kind of cool if maybe you got off the bike when you're on school grounds. And he went, fuck off, right? And then it occurred to me that actually... being a teacher, your authority as a teacher is bullshit, right? Yeah. Because it's only lasts as long as the kids believe in this fake setup. Because the teacher's authority is fake, right? Mm. And so once a kid realizes
it's also
fake,
it's a similar confidence that you have as a stand-up.
Yes, exactly right. So once a kid goes, I don't really give a shit. Like, so I remember, like, going to a kid. There's a kid in one of the lessons in that school. Where as soon as I spoke, he went meh. Oh. Right, you can't do anything. You can't do anything, mate. So I go. Okay, can we stop that? Can we stop that? And then you hear nothing. And then you go right. Learning objective. Matt. Every time I spoke, Matt, Matt, Matt. So I'm just like, what the fuck? So then I go to him. You keep doing that, mate.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to be out of the lesson. He goes, I don't want to be in this fucking lesson. So what do you do then?
He's got a point.
The whole thing's fake. So from a surface level point of view, that is horrific, right? As a teacher, it's very difficult situation. But what I would say, sort of being kind of like a bit of a sort of worthy prick about it, is after, if you read the stories of any of those kids, their backgrounds, right? I'm just glad that you're at school, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, because you're going to get a hot lunch and you're not getting that shit. They're coming from such horrible backgrounds. But actually, what that does is it liberates you from getting stressed out about it. Because if a kid tells you to fuck off, you go, yeah, I would probably say that because I don't want to add fractions with different denominators either. Do you know what I mean? So you just sort of accept it.
Have you used algebra in your adult life?
No, but that's the thing. That's the other thing is, like, you know, as a maths teacher, I sort of disagreed with a lot of what we were teaching because I was teaching a lot of bottom sets. And I just don't think... that when a kid asks you the question, why are we learning this, that the answer, because it's in the exam, is good enough. Because you have to be teaching kids shit they're actually going to use. And, like, there's so many people that have negative relationship with maths because they were being forced to learn fucking algebra and shit. They don't need that. Just fucking teach them adult numerics. Just teach them enough so they don't get nervous about how much change they should get in a shop.
I think I've used to try and equate, like, whether a dealer's given me a bad amount of drugs. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think that's the only amount of maths that I've ever used in my life.
Yeah, I get that.
Why else would I use it?
Yeah.
Is there another question in the audience? Is anyone brave enough? Oh, I see one over there. I'm coming.
My name is Isis. So have you got any advice or jokes?
It's a good question. Any
I think
advice?
This is one for you, bro.
Your surname isn't Jihad, is it? No, what your name's Isis.
It's a beautiful name. And what's the real meaning of, or what other meanings are there other than, you know, the one we know now? See, that's
like
beautiful.
A goddess or from a song, she says.
Yeah, that's
What do people say to you when you tell them your name's Isis? What's it like for you at the
airport?
She said
she gets messages.
You get messages? It's because there's a trend, isn't there, of taking Facebook names and putting them into a song, isn't there? So, like, people are probably searching for... You know, like when somebody's name's...
Also, because someone in the crowd reminded me about Trudy Knight.
Trudy Knight, there
I will make it Trudy Knight.
I'll make...
Come
on. Oh, shit.
Not Trudy Knight's got messaged.
I think that it's, you know, it's important that people don't associate ISIS with terrorism. And I think what you're doing just by existing with the name ISIS is a wonderful service to humanity.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
I just want to thank you for being alive. Yeah. That's the honest truth of it.
That's lovely, man.
That's... And I said that to another one of my friends who's called Bitch Killer. That was...
What a wonderful name.
It's Bulgarian. What can you do?
Is there any other questions before we... That's a long way for me to go. I'm very drunk.
All right, here we go. Matt Smith first. Let's go.
So you guys are UK hip-hop royalty, right? What's your favourite actual UK... Well, your favourite hip-hop verse? Never mind the MC. What's the verse?
I tear it up like the claws of Satan. I ain't sick, I'm nauseating. On hold like a caller waiting. Bare face like fornicating on telly stations with a girl you never met the night before your engagement. Chester P on the intro. That was the one, bro. Chester That's P. one of the best verses of all time. Straight up.
It's a very good answer.
Does Romesh have one? Do you have a favourite UK MC?
I used to really love Gunshot. 21 Gun Salute, pam pam. Do you know what I mean? I also like Black Twang.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I love about Black Twang? Is he had like all of the... Black Twang has got all the references from, like, you know, you get gun like Phil Mitchell. Spit, do you know what I mean?
That's all you want to hear.
Spit on you like Patrick Vieira did Neil Ruddock. Do you know what I mean? I love all that shit. That's why I love you. That's why I love UK hip hop, because you sort of get the references. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking sweet.
It's about time to wrap it up. Make noise for my wonderful special guests for this evening. Roy Rush Ranganathan and Ed Skrein. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone for coming tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, season 2, episode 1. Thank you so much to everyone that came down to the Phoenix in March 2018 and packed out that room. And thank you also to the staff at the Phoenix for letting us record down there. Big thank you to Seb, who recorded that live show. And of course, shout out to Ed and Rom for coming down and getting fucking smashed with me. Make sure, if you haven't already, subscribe to the Thanks for Trying podcast. Leave a review. Tell your mates. Do all that good shit. And go get my brand new record. Stream it. No one fucking actually buys records anymore, right? Or download shit. But make sure you go stream it on Spotify and listen and enjoy that shit. My brand new record is called Under the Patio and it's out now. Damn, go listen to that. It's fucking sick. Features Koji Radical, The Manor, Screw Fizzer, Michael Payne. The lineup is ridiculous. You'll fucking love it. Episode 2 will be coming out next week.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.